Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.
You're listening to RTE Radio 1. Tonight's Drama on One is Heaven by Eugene O'Brien, a radio version of Fishamble's hit stage show, which has toured Ireland, the US and UK. The multi-award-winning Heaven is set in the Irish Midlands during the weekend of a local wedding. Mairead and Mal are struggling to keep their marriage together. Perhaps attending a wedding will help, or it might raise questions that are difficult to answer. The play was first commissioned and produced on stage by Fishamble, the new play company. And just a note that the play contains strong language and adult themes from the start. Starring Andrew Bennett and Janet Moran, this is Heaven by Eugene O'Brien, directed by Jim Culleton.
I told a lie earlier today. The sister asked what was it like to be home. I said, great. The sister, Laura, then took upon herself to drive me around the town. A tour. Bring me up to date, like. I mean. The Dublin roadside, you've the three-headed monster, Tesco, Aldi and Lidl. And then further on, you've two chemists, a few tattoo parlours, vape and charity shops. That's your lot in the main street. And then we swung left, a road opposite the canal bank, down into the vacant office and shop buildings of Desolation Row. Monuments to the madness. Anyways, we're back for Laura's wedding. She finally landed herself a fella, Bean O'Byrne. A good 10 years on her, like he's my age. Was in the home economics class with us in school. Was caught pissing into a bottle during a detention. Family's a bit, you know. I've warned Mal about them. They're grand, but a bit out there up front. Mal will not like this. Mal likes manners and politeness and calm and routine, and there's nothing wrong with that. Especially since the stents were put in 2 years ago. Mal is the old man, the hubby. The jockey once upon a time, oh yeah. But now the comfortable shoe, the rock. The Mal from the county of Limerick. I'm down there 20 years now, ever since we got hitched, in the city. By Jesus, it's improved. Used to be some kip. The city of love, I joke, if you can avoid getting stabbed. I speak my mind. And as I say, Mal is never happy and is nappy about that, but sure, he's given up long since trying to, you know. That's one good thing about Mal. He never tried to change me. Our daughter, Siobhan, was supposed to come with us, but she was called into work at the last minute into the hospital, or so she says. She's a junior nurse. She's only 19, but has just moved into an apartment with Wayne, a fierce, dull creature who works for his father in a print business. I haven't been to the place yet. Mal has, says it's grand. But she's so young-like to be shacking up with someone. But it's her life. We rarely talk, so it's... I look at him. I mean, we don't really... look at the bottom line is that we just don't get on. Same flesh and blood, but just cut from different cloth. It happens. We make the effort. We are civil. Full stop, okay? Anyways, I'm out the night before the wedding. Mal is not. He's been off the drink since the stents and is happy above in Bridgie Coyne's B&B with the Late Late Show in Tuberty. But I'm heading to Davies, see if anyone is around. I order a pint of lager with a, how are you, Davy? Long time no see. And then he clicks and he smiles. Marae, didn't know you. Long time. Nice to see you. I take a gander around, but don't really know anyone. There's a few that nod and say hello, but none that I've ever knocked around with. I hear Hulk Hogan singing in the bar. And I think of Siobhan and our last awful phone call and how much I dislike her. And it makes me sad to actively dislike your own flesh and blood. And then I spot some large as life and twice as ugly coming in from the smoking area. and he's not looking bad. The years have been kind, though he used to abuse himself, shocking and pound to a penny, still does. The bowed Breffni Gran. No holds barred, full on first love, straight out of the heart and the groin, and feeling like I couldn't fucking live without him. 20 I was, at war with everyone but him. Breffni. He picks up his glass and he sidles over to me. How goes it? As if he'd just seen me yesterday as opposed to the years it's been. He's a slight American twang at the end of the sentences that come out of his gob on account of him being in Boston for 20 years. And then, when his marriage broke up, he moved home and took up residence in Kells with some Polish one, Ida. But Ida gave him the old heave-ho, so he was on the tod now. There's a new melancholy about Breffni that I like. I ask, why is he home? And he says that he's here for the wedding. And I remember, of course, that he used to pal round with Beano at school and that Beano always kind of treated Breffni like a superhero. Breffni dared to do the thing that no one else would. He liked to see himself as a kind of an outlaw. He'd a Mad Max poster up in his room and he listened to Nick Cave, who I didn't like at the time, thought he was weird. I was more your straightforward Whitney girl back then. Anyways, Breffni is staring into me now. Dull brown eyes. The way you're doing that, like you were all he was interested in. He asks about me. I give up very little. Just bare facts. Mal, Siobhan, moving to Limerick, my job, social worker. He's pleased that I did something with myself. I say, well, I got good practice putting up a hopeless cases like him. He laughs. Another silence. Before we hear the Hulk Hogan launching into a song from Cats. I want to get pissed now. I feel like it. I haven't been pissed in ages. The old monster can come out of its box sometimes when I have the few drinks. Mal gets the brunt of it. I ask Breffni, does he have any kids? And he shakes his head. I've a flash of us fucking in his back room. He always made me come. Well, like, the most of the time. One night, whatever happened, Faldy Johnny, whatever. 2 weeks later, my period was late and I did a test, and what do you know? Up the duff. I ask him, does he remember Birmingham, the clinic? Breffni waited in the waiting room with all the other dads who would not be dads. Breffni wonders what kind of a dad he might have been. He admits to me that if I had wanted the child in any way, he would have stood by me. He says he kind of regrets it. I say that I don't. But I do wonder what kind of a child they might have been. The one disposed of in that clinic in Birmingham. Like, if I'd been a girl, would I have gotten on better with her than I do the one I did push out? Anyway, Hulk Hogan spots Breffni and Hulk insists on buying us whiskies and pints, and the night starts to swirl and me and Breffni are outside smoking. I haven't pulled on a fag for years, and before I know what's happening, we're kissing. Tongues and the smell of them, and the past comes back at me like a fucking train, and that real desire for him. Jesus Christ. Poor Mal back in the B&B, and I stop and try to leave, but Breffni pulls me and I push him and he says sorry and how he'll see me tomorrow, and I walk on, get away. I'll get back now to the B&B and warm bed and Mal's little snore, and he'll curl up around me and place his hand on my back, and I'll conk out away with the fairies to a place where Mairead is okay in herself. Because she knows that her 50 years spent on the planet are about to amount to something. Surely it is all leading to something. Surely it has to be. Surely it has to be leading to somewhere.
I walk up to Jesus. He looks down on me. I rise my hands up and touch his chest, and I can feel the sweat and blood, and I cry, and somehow I'm able to lift him down off the cross. His hands and arms encircle me. He looks into my eyes. I look into his. The most beautiful thing that I have ever seen. have an erection. He reaches down and takes hold of me and starts to... I close my eyes and I'm free in my head. Completely free. And I cry out and... I refocus now away from the crucifix on the wall of Coyne's B&B and the recurring fantasy I used to have as an altar boy. There was a lot of time to fill at the many masses that I served at, so... I loved the smell of the benediction, and Easter was my favourite feast day. Home was in Ballymurphy in Limerick, rural, a farm. I settle back into this world and finish off the fry. Shouldn't really be eating dead pigs since the stents, but every now and again it's okay. Herself is still asleep, dead to the world. She must have got in late enough because I didn't hear a ha'penth from her. She was out in the pub. I don't drink anymore on account of the heart thing a few years ago. I wonder what way she was last night. She can get quite inebriated sometimes and has a habit of talking to herself as if I'm not there, and sometimes she says things that I definitely shouldn't be hearing. Very personal remarks about me and Siobhan. They really don't get on. We do. Me and Mairead always got on. We're the best of pals. But Siobhan and herself are... they're so alike. But their worldview is so totally opposed. It frustrates them, this distance. Like, they make an effort, but sometimes they just can't keep it up, and the Sunday dinners are suddenly full of tension and cross-talk, a battle. Me in the middle like a limp, hapless Kofi Annan. I was kind of relieved when Siobhan moved out to live with Wayne a couple of months ago now. I miss her a whole heap and I talk to her, but Mairead and herself, just a lost cause. That's the reality of it. But me and Mairead don't hit each other. We rub along. We suit. We found something. She is really very bright, sharp, with it. The type of person who could have gone to college straight off if that had been encouraged, but in their house it wasn't the type of thing to be... like, it wasn't on the agenda. It was all do the leaving, travel maybe for 2 years, get a job you hate, marry someone you fell over at the local disco, and boom, kids in middle age quickly ensues. But Mairead wasn't like the rest of the flock. She always did her own thing. She decided at the age of 30, the year before I met her, to latch onto something and train as a social worker. And she did it. And she is good at it. Now if only I could fix myself, she does laugh. But then you'd lose your edge, I say. And she says that I'd have wanted to know her when she was younger, she'd an edge that fucking drew blood. Excuse the French. Now, she isn't everyone's cup of tea. She doesn't edit. It all comes out and be the holy fly, it can cause ructions. She's always taking the piss out of me, but it's affectionate. The day she stops doing that, then I know we are in trouble. She came into my life at a real important time, a vital intervention. Anyhow, I better wake her. But the old head is beginning to sink away again to Jesus. But he's not on the cross this time. He was over in Laura's house yesterday, where we met Bino and his mad crew. He was a younger cousin of Bino's. He was Jesus. I couldn't stop looking. Jesus down off the cross and pulling on a cigarette and wiping blonde hair out of his face and touching his little goatee and laughing, and I was introduced to him. Jesus' name was Michael, and he was about 10 years younger than Jesus was when he was put up on the cross. I shook his hand. Electric shock. He had an energy. Something new, just out of reach. His eyes were... I have to stop. Heart pumps again, too fast, and the breath is... That's it. Close the eyes. Breathe. Calm. Calm. relax. I open my eyes and see Mairead sitting up in the bed. She needs to be up and at it down at the bride's house. She doesn't really go into where she was last night or who she met. And she grabs up her wedding outfit and says, "See you in the church," and gives me a nice smile before she hightails it out the door. I get into my suit. I remember the day we got married, knowing in a way that she had no real passion for me. I knew she wasn't in love with me like the can't live without you tear the clothes off the back kind of thing. But we had something else, a partnership, a trust. I knew that she was the way I had to go. There was another way, but I just didn't feel it was right for me, wouldn't suit the way I wanted to live. But I felt I should try this road before I got married, to get it out of the system. I looked up a website and chose him very carefully. I needed to fancy the person. I needed to experience real desire. So I chose him, the closest to a Jesus I could find. I think his name was Jimmy. He was a North Dub lad, 19. He had green eyes, very skinny. I was so nervous I could hardly speak. He was chatty. "Relax," he says. I had booked a room, a Marriott. He stood in front of me and asked what I wanted, and I said that I didn't know. He leaned down and kissed me. He unzipped me. He took me in his hand. I felt like crying. It was so, like, he said things, really nice things, but he had been paid to say them. We'd agreed the money up front. He knelt down, but I couldn't allow that. It was too much. I wasn't able to. I couldn't. I finished then anyway before he had to use his mouth. I finished very quickly and was immediately mortified. I ran to the loo to clean myself off, and when I got back, he was gone. I stood in the empty hotel room. I thought about staying the night, seeing as I'd paid for it, but I went to meet Mairead, and I felt a huge surge of relief come over me when I saw her. I couldn't wait to be married now. And 2 months later, we were. I try to be in the moment more nowadays, ever since the stents were put in. I try to breathe and be in the moment, but it's getting harder. I can't keep my head from, my whole body, from slipping down into this other space, or dimension, whatever the dickens you describe it, this place, with Jesus and that young lad I met yesterday. Down here, where I am me, and the world is over there. So far apart. Which is how I needed it until a couple of years ago, lying in the hospital. I dreamt of Jesus for the first time in ages. Maybe it was the medication, but I saw him as clear as day. Walking into the ward, walking over to me. Bloody face and stigmata. And he lay down beside me and took me in his arms, and I was never as glad to see anyone.
The sister stands before the priest and her groom, the bald Beano Byrne, and they say their I do's, and she is happy. I can tell. And it makes me feel like crying, because God love us, where we started out, there wasn't that much cause to ever feel good about Anton. She got the brunt of it. I stood up to him early on, but she took after Ma, hypnotised into thinking everything was her own fault. I was like him. I was a bully in school. He kind of admired that in me, that I was a chip off the old block. Anyways, Laura walks away on down the aisle, arm in arm with Beano, and everyone claps and cheers. The one blessing is that our old man is not above ground to give her away. He left the world 10 years ago. Sometimes cancer does cull the right ones. I catch sight of Breffni. He's sitting near the back in a red jacket. Always the boy who had to stand out. He sees me and nods. I pretend I don't see this. We shuffle on down the aisle after Laura and back to the hotel for the reception and the speeches and Bino's cousins holding court. There's very few of our side of the family left alive. Thanks be to Jesus. Bino's best man is called Declan, but everyone calls him the Hobbit on account of his huge feet. So the Hobbit's in the middle of his speech and it's toe-curlingly awful. The terrible combination of too much drink and the firm belief that you're the funniest man in the room, and it's all embarrassing stuff about Bino's past and icky shit that I would shoot him for. Laura pretends to laugh, but I can tell she's raging and just wishing that he'd shut up and fuck off back away to Middle Earth. I tune out and take a drink and look to see Breffni slipping away out for a smoke. I place my hand on Mal's arm and I squeeze it. He's surprised. We're not tactile, not as a rule. I quaff more wine. First one went down real slow, delicate from last night, but now I was over the hump and my system was ready and willing to take in as much lady petrol as I could get down my throat. Flashes of Breffni, his mouth, smell, his hands around my back trying to get under my shirt. There's applause, cheers, whistles, the Hobbit is over. We all have to stand up and vacate the room while the tables are cleared for the dancing to begin. Breffni is still outside in the smoking area, but I'm staying here. Mal likes to dance and I like to dance with him. He can jive and all that was taught by an aunt when he was 10 and he's never forgotten it. Me and Mal will have a dance and let Breffni smoke fags and spin his yarns outside. We run into Laura's gang from the meat factory in high spirits and one of them, Joan, a heart as big as her arse, offers me a shot. Sure, why not? It's a baby Guinness. Mal gives me a look, but I ignore him and knock it back and laugh at some stupid thing Joan says. The only reason I'd kick him out of bed would be to ride him on the floor. She's referring to one of Bino's cousins. Some young lad, long hair, beard, like a little mini Jesus or something. But he looks well, in fairness. Mal seems restless. So I take pity on him and I promise him a dance as soon as the band sets up. Another man beside us is talking about the immigrants and how we be swamped and they get all the houses and everyone's too afraid to say anything and I butt in, fuck that. Who are we to be anti-immigrant to me in every country in the world? Irish people are like rats, you're never more than 10 feet from one. And Joan laughs. He looks pissed off. Fuck him. I swig me vodka. Mal gives me another look. Chill the fuck out, Mal. Don't be... Come on away now and we'll dance. I grab his arm. The band is up and running. We move out onto the dance floor and spin around to Sweet Caroline. Oh, oh, oh.
She's gone over her limit. I know when it goes over a certain quota, the worm can turn and she looks for trouble. But the dancing has been a great distraction and we've both enjoyed swinging around to Sweet Caroline, Walk of Life, Wake Me Up Before You Go Go and Hound Dog. If I can keep her on the floor for the rest of the night, it'll leave her less time to drink, avoid a code red. But just as Come On Eileen is starting up, she leaves go me hand and announces that she needs the jacks. I'm kind of glad as I need a little break myself. I'm a bit out of puff. So I sit down, supping on me 7-Up, and a lad plants himself down beside me. Thatch of red hair, sweat, loose tie and open collar. One of Bino's cousins, Henny Holohan. He's back from Oz like the rest of them. His wife, Steph, wanted to come home and has decided that they're not going back. Henny thinks it's madness to stay home. They have work permits and everything. Steph was working for a grand little salon down there. He was working as a landscape gardener. He shakes his head. Steph barrels towards us and she's all blonde highlights and made up to the nines. She's high as a kite and talks 90 to the dozen. Henny ignores her. He's determined to fight with her. You can tell, determined to take out his frustration on her because she made him make a decision he didn't like. Steph pulls at his hand when Dancing Queen comes on, but there is not a chance of him being led onto the floor, so she gives up, and I offer. Ooh, see that girl, watch that scene, dig in the Dancing Queen. The song always takes me right back to my first meeting with Mairead. It played in the pub while I waited for her to show up, a blind date. I felt so dry and unfunny in her company, but I really enjoyed listening to her, and I knew that I could marry this woman. I was 34 and she was 31 and had made changes in her life. She had sought help. She had started to look into herself, to see who she really was. I needed someone strong, someone who would sweep me along, keep me here in this world, not allow me wander down below. And I wanted a child. I dearly wanted a child. You can dance, you can jive, having the time of your life. I'm back in the room, moving around to ABBA. But Steph is more intent on rabbiting onto me. She seems very speedy, talking about her and Henny, the way people talk nowadays, as if the whole world is interested in their business. She's banging on about the real reason Henny is so intent on staying in Australia. Steph is convinced there was a one in work had her eye on Henny. Big titted one, the kind he likes. A hint of the foreign about her, darker, you know, and I know he likes that too. Browsing history's a great giveaway, know what I mean? Anyways, she used to be texting him and all this, and I ate the bollocks off him, but he maintained that they were just mates. But the thing is, and I'm not a jealous little, pathetic little, insecure little kind of a one, you know. I am a woman who knows her own mind. I just wanted him to want to come home to Ireland with me, but he didn't want to. And that hurts me, Mal. It hurts me. Stabs me, Mal. It stabs me in the heart. He wanted to stay in Melbourne with her big fat tits. I knows it. He's ticked now. He won't touch me, Mal. He won't lay a finger on me. Is that fair? I ask you. Now she's clutching my arm. She's definitely on something that's speeding her up. I mean, I have no real experience of these things, but she's on more than Bacardi breezers. We sit down then as a slower kind of song comes on, The Lady in Red, and Steph leans into me. I'm in great form, flying. I'm being a bit bold, Mal. I brought a bit of stuff with me today for the crack, for the days that's in it. Haven't taken it in ages, so I'm giving it a right good go. Like it's a celebration, isn't it? It's good, Mal. Have I shocked you? I shake my head. Have you ever tried coke, Mal? I shake my head again. There's still no sign of Mairead back in the room. Then I spot Jesus. His beautiful mouth breaks into a big laugh. He turns and I watch the back of his head disappear through the packed dance floor. I get a notion. Me on coke. Me speeded up. Me without fear. Me being able to drop down to the other dimension, the lower one. Mal on coke could jump down and land and take his place in that dimension with Jesus. Could he? I smile at Laura as she passes by and she asks, am I having a good day? And I say the best and how I'll want to dance later. And she asks where her sister is and I say that I don't know. Keep an eye on that one, Mal. And she laughs and I laugh and she moves on. And Steph gets to her feet. I find myself walking behind her. We head out through the doors of the function room into the corridor. I have to say something now or I look like a terrible fool. So I look her in the eye, clear my throat and say, trying to see myself as some sort of cool, dark horse, 50-plus coke-snorting fiend, and I come out and say it, Steph, sorry, but, like, I was just wondering, like, if it was cool, like, I was just wondering if I could score off of you. She says nothing. Her face freezes. Then her face creases into laughter. It is the funniest thing she's ever heard. Mal asking to score some coke off of her. I stand humiliated. I'm about to turn and go when she nods over to the front doors of the hotel. She winks and says, "Folly me." We sit in the front seats of their car, a saloon of some sort. It is parked well away from the front of the hotel, trees overhead. It is safe, because I may be about to leave this dimension, the one I was born into. Attending the Crescent and notions of the Jesuits, but teaching instead, and safe, holy home with Mam and Dad and their honeymoon in Lourdes, and never a cross word, and complete faith to do as they were told, a nation of obedient children. I found great comfort too in the Mass, the ritual, the confessions. The last one I ever did was after the Marriott Hotel, but I couldn't tell the priest what had happened with the the hired hand, so I made up sins like you did when you were a child. I watch Steph cut the coke into little lines like I've only ever seen in the movies. Was I about to leave this life? This fucking dream world that I float through and never fully inhabit? Fuck! I should just get out of the car. No, coward. Do it, coward. That's what you are, Mal. Mal. Who the fuck is Mal? I feel kind of sick at myself. I could vomit at the thoughts of who I am. I should just open the door, but I don't. I stop, I wait, I can hardly breathe. Steph has the 20 euro note rolled up to her nose, and she lowers the head and hoovers it up. Then she grins and hands me the note. Your go, Mal. She sniffs and smiles, and it's too late to turn back now, so I lower the head and do the same. There'll be nothing to hold me back now. Nothing to stop me from digging deep to the underneath, where I will go in search of Jesus.
I've been gone ages now, in the smoking area to the rear of the hotel. I've stalled the ball on the drink for the past little while, so I'm all cooled off and zen-like. I have never fancied anyone as much as Breffni. We fit that way. Some people are just tuned in sex-wise, and I can feel him wanting the same, or at least I think I can. It's been so long since. It's been 5 years since me and Mal had a go. It was Easter time. Jesus had just risen from the dead when Mal attempted to do the same, but it didn't last. He lost his, you know, before we could properly get going. He clearly didn't want me anymore, that way anyway, and I had long since lost my mojo for Mal, so we shut up shop. I did think about counselling with this woman I knew who specialised in trying to get long-term marrieds horny for each other again. This woman advocates role-playing in the bedroom. Can you imagine Mal role-playing? I mean, no. I just couldn't put him through it. Let him read his book about Stalingrad and roll over and go to sleep. So I haven't been there in a long time and I wanted to be. I felt it deep in the guts of me that I needed to be. And Breffni is here and Mal couldn't mind, so I'm going to suggest something. I head through to the bar. I order more wine and a pint for Breffni. I think about what I'm doing. I tried to float above myself and look down, see myself clearly, out of body like. I am going to ask my ex-lover to sleep with me whilst my husband, blissfully unaware, jives to the Midnight Blue wedding band. Has it come to this? All my 50 plus years on the planet have been leading to this? Really? Flash of Mal comes into me skull. Tears in his eyes, crying after he came home from school one day last year. Some boy had called him a queer or something. Mal had tried so hard with this disadvantaged lad from the council flats for to get his leaving. Put his heart and soul into the lad. Mal had berated him for not working as hard as he had been, and the lad called Mal a queer. Poor Mal, he was so hurt. He doesn't cry easily. I held him and soothed him like a child until he stopped and dried his eyes. He looked to me and said, "Thank you. I am so glad I have you," he said. I take a good gulp of wine and think about giving the whole thing up when Breffni skips in beside me, whooshes up the pint and takes a large swallow. I nod to him, racking me head as to how to get around to... What? Just ask him out straight. You're both old enough and ugly enough. So I open my mouth, take a leap, trusting that something will come out. "Breffni, do you want to go somewhere and... you know, the way we used to?" Breffni sits kind of stunned. He takes a drink. He looks back at me. His mouth curls into a shy kind of a smile. He says, "I would love that. I always thought of us, you know, as some wild thing we had. But it's mad, Mairead. Your old man in there jiving to the music and he seems real decent and..." I interrupt him. I have to lay it out. Mal is my best friend, always will be, but we don't do anything physical anymore. He doesn't care, Breffni. He feels guilty, if anything. Like he wishes someone would take the burden off of him. Breffni looks to me. Well, he's mad. You still have it all going on, Mairead. I shake my head and Lon, I think he's messing. But so fucking glad that he said it. Breffni pauses. He's suddenly furtive, almost coy. Like now it's real and he has to actually do something about it. He says in a real low voice, I have a key for the old place. His box room flashes into my head. The Mad Max poster, the small single bed. I nod and we finish our drinks in silence. Nervous now, the deal has been done. We are entering uncharted waters. 2 50-year-olds are going to try to light each other up like they used to all those years ago. Breffni gets up off his stool. I'll split off, give it a minute and then follow me on. I nod. He heads off. I feel a tingle. An old-fashioned shoot of Jesus, is this happening? You better believe it, girl. I give it a few more seconds and then move. I walk through the lobby of the hotel on the watch out for Mal or anyone else I know, but I am able to make a clean break. Out the front door, into the car park, through the front gates, along the road towards the town. I text Mal. I can't not text him. I say that I felt sick and I've gone home, nearly asleep. Please stay out and enjoy yourself. I hurry on past pubs and drunken skins and I near the door of the house. I text that I'm approaching. The door opens, I push, I step in. Before I know what has hit me, Breffni is on me, mouth on my mouth. He has me pinned to the wall, his late ma's Sacred Heart looking down on us. I kiss him back. By Jesus, it's great to be kissing someone again. Let's get at it. He directs me in the door, this absolutely, I mean, compared to his old pokey cold back bedroom, it's a palace. And a big decent double bed and I pull him down onto it and I yank the red jacket off of him and we kiss like we've only just discovered it and like it's the best thing ever that anyone could ever do. We pull each other's buttons and zips and straps and he's breathing heavier than he used to. The 30 more years of smoke and taking its toll, but we're there. In that weird and wonderful place, we are right there. Me and the bowel breath. And our bodies mightn't be as tight as they once were, but by Jesus, we know the ropes and we go at it now. At it now. What can I tell you? I feel like tears. The release of it. And he groans. He is gone from the gate. I will soon follow him.
Back inside this good while now and I really am feeling very little. I mean, I'm kind of disappointed. I'm tapping my foot along to Rockin' All Over the World and watching Steph chat up some man with a huge head and no chin. Henny looks worse for wear now and is in a cluster of the cousins and Bino seems to be trying to calm him down. It could all kick off, as they say. I scan the room, but there's no sign of Jesus. Where is Jesus? I take out my phone to check the time. I see that there's a text from Mairead. She's gone back to the B&B, feeling sick. Too much vino even for her. She'd usually have to be dragged out kicking and screaming. She'll be like a briar tomorrow. But tomorrow is tomorrow, Mal. Look around. I'm feeling kind of hot. They start up New York, New York, and everyone's on the floor, but there's still no sign of Jesus. Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. Oh, I do feel warm, dry, and need a drink, so I go to the bar and order a tonic water. But then before I know what I've done, I ask the barman to give me a gin as well. I mix them and drink them, and it is the nicest drink I've ever tasted. I sink it. Stents or no stents, I'll be grand. I feel a creeping surge of, what is it? Excitement. It's new, this feeling. It's, where will it end? I order another G&T and drink it back. And there's just something about the room now, the atmosphere in the room now, like they're all here in my show, my story, like they're all dancing to the beat of my drum. It's not Laura's day at all. It was all set up for me. This whole day was set up for Mal. It somehow was all going to be about me and who I am. And I stride through the dancers and gulp back my gin and tonic. Mairead is not part of this night. This is Mal's night. It's like it's all leading towards something. I feel it in my waters. I feel it pumping around my blood, into my heart, my stents, fit as a fiddle, raring to go. Where is Jesus?
just to talk to him, say a word or two, share a moment or two, but I can't see him anywhere. And then I'm pulled into the line for Frank Sinatra, and everyone's kicking the legs. If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. And I'm thinking about ducking out of it, but it's like a scrum. And then something happens to my left, a movement, a roar. I look across. The whole room looks across. It's all got out of hand. Henny has boiled over. He has the chap with no chin by the throat and he's threatening to squeeze the fucking life out of him. Steph is trying to pull him off. Others rush in and try and calm the situation, but Henny will not let go. I find myself moving forward with one hand raised in the air like I'm about to wave a white handkerchief. Don't shoot, please. I'm rounding on Henny like he will listen to me and no one else. Like I have the power to calm the beast. A Dr. Doolittle. I can talk to the animals. And Henny squares up to me. But I have no fear. And I look him straight in the eye. Let it go, Henny. You're a bigger man than this. And he lets go of your man's throat. And I shake my head and smile. And he smiles. And Steph is livid and storms off. And Henny puts his arm around me. And we move off away from the crowd and get outside the room. And Henny leans into me. And he says he knows where there'll be loads of crack and no shite and no Steph. And Henny and me are way off down the corridor. And before I know it, he's rapping on the door of 131. And it opens. And Jesus stands in front of us. With a bottle of beer and what looks like a joint in his mouth. Hiya, men, says Jesus. And I know that he is the most beautiful thing that I have ever seen. Through him, with him, in the unity of the Holy Spirit, all glory and honor are yours, Almighty Father, forever and ever. And we file past Jesus and into the room.
Breffni lies beside me. I lean into him and kiss his face. Thanks, Breff. That was, you know, thanks, like, for the pleasure of it. He's taken aback. He nods. Ah, yeah, thank you. He wants to say more, but hesitates, and my head swims with possibility. My 50 years been leading to what? The truth is out there. And a need for what? I'm arrayed. Who are you? I am a mother. I think of Siobhan and the resentment she has for what she blames me for and our lack of being able to connect, and I suddenly feel tears. That's the drink and the sex, and now her, Siobhan. Makes me cry. Breffni's alarmed when he sees my tears. Oh no, crazy emotional woman alert. But I grin and say it's okay. And he looks at me, all soulful like, and he starts to speak very hesitantly at first about us. He really wants to talk about us. That the universe has spoken. We are meant to be together. He is certain of this. He says, Mairead, I love you. I want you to come away with me. I have money saved. I have my eye on a cottage in Kerry out near the Atlantic where we could live. We could really live properly, Mairead, not just go through the motions. I am so surprised. I mean, I look at him. Is he being serious? He is. He says that he's thinking of giving up the drink. He's been reading a lot about Buddhism, a new way to live, but he needs me with him. And then he says, I prayed that we'd still feel the same way about each other. How do you know how I feel? I shoot back to him. I don't, he says, in fairness. Like he has laid it all out there without any guarantee. I look at him, kiss his lips. I draw back from him. I try and go there. Me and the breath by the sea and our little house and him praying to a Buddha and me all healthy and happy, and I suddenly feel a turn in my stomach. A turn the right way. A turn that makes me feel like this could be, maybe, a monu-fucking-mental night of my life. And he kisses me.
He knows I will have to go back to Mall tonight, but he'll be waiting for me in the square in the morning. He'll drive off at 9, whether I turn up or not. He seems so certain. I get up and lean down to find me clothes. I dress in silence. He watches me. He says again that he loves me. I lean back and kiss him. I head off. I don't look back. I am getting nearer to something. The answer to the question, who am I? A woman who leaves her husband very suddenly for an old lover and heads to a cottage in Kerry. The Jesus, maybe I am. Is this where the 50 plus years has been leading me? Be Jesus, maybe it is.
I'm sitting on the edge of the bed drinking a bottle of beer. It is a hotel room full of voices. The Hobbit, his brother Flipper, Big Joan, and of course Jesus. My eyes full of Jesus. His lips moving and his hand at his beard and pulling back his hair out of his amazing eyes. Flipper is rolling a joint and Joan is leaning over him. Hobbit is the drunkest of them all. He's sitting in behind Joan and making lewd comments about her ample bosom. She gives shit back to him and is far more interested in Flipper, who has now almost got the joint together. I retreat to the other armchair. It was getting too much for me. The proximity to Jesus was too much. I think about going. I think about beating a path to the door when Jesus is handed the joint and passes it on to me. I take a pull. Feel it harsh at the back of my throat. I cough, but manage to keep it in my lungs. I have another go. I feel the lift, the relax, the drift. Jesus takes it from me and takes a drag. Joan and Flipper are necking on the other end of the bed. The Hobbit is near conked out. Jesus asks me something. He wants to know what I'd do if I had only one day left on the planet Earth. I can answer this, I don't think. I just say I would try and give my students one last useful lesson. Jesus gestures towards the room. Come on, get up and give it to us. I stand. I will tell them everything I know. I will stand tall. Jesus wants me to speak. Hey, everyone, I want to say something. I want to tell you all something. Flipper and Joan come up for air. Henny and the Hobbit look across. Jesus urges me to keep going, so I do. I'm so pleased that you were all able to make it today. It has been a pleasure to teach you. I'm sorry, but this is my last day. I want to tell you about the shadow. It is something buried deep down in us that we suppress, and this causes us to hide. Out of the light, out of our true natures. We are afraid. We are lashed to the mast of duty or who we think we should be, and we betray our potential for happiness and really living a life. Jesus looks up at me. I am raised up. I am preaching the Sermon on the Mount, and Jesus is listening. My words fill the room. Go out from here and be true to yourself. Then and only then can you take your proper place in the community of the world. Game B is coming. Reach out to your fellow human beings. A new wave is on the way. It's like I'm speaking in tongues, like a great truth is gushing out of me. And Jesus smiles. He claps. He is applauding me. And I am 10 foot tall again. I am flying now. He takes my hand and lifts it above his head like I'm a sports champion or something. I lean into Jesus. I want to tell him how I once dreamed of him and yearned for him to come off the cross. He opens his lips to say, I hear you, man. I hear your truth. And so I lean in and I kiss my Jesus on the forehead. For a moment, time stops. Then he draws back away from me. He opens his eyes as if coming out of a dream or just waking up. I look at his lips. I move my face down. I can feel his breath. I'm about to touch his lips gently with mine. when suddenly Henny has me by the collar and he's shouting at me, hauling me towards the door, shouting, "Queer!" Henny wants to kill something. He raises his fist. I brace myself. Jesus intervenes. He grabs Henny's arm and pulls him back. He insists that everything is cool and to sit back down. He asks Flipper to roll another joint real quick. Then Jesus nods at me. He is taking care of me, shepherding me, out of the lion's den, out the door of the hotel room, into the corridor. I want to thank Jesus. I want to say so much to him, but I don't have the words. Standing in the hotel corridor, he says that it was real good to meet me and that he really liked what I said. He grins. I am kind of bi, you know, but you're a bit old. I want to say words, but I'm struck dumb. Then, out of nowhere, I say, words start coming out of me, words I remember from long ago. Auribus teneo lupum, aut cum scuto, aut in scuto, vive quasi cras morituros, aut viam in veniam, aut faciam, igne natura renovator integra. Jesus smiles and nods. He likes the Latin. He asks what it means. I say, roughly, that I am holding a wolf by the ears, and it's do or die. I have to live as if today is my last day alive, that I have to find a way or make one, that through fire, nature is reborn. Jesus likes this. He leans forward very slowly and kisses my lips very softly, with great affection. And then he goes back inside. I am alone. I am floating on air. I am feeling complete and utter rapture. I am away. I'm never turning back from this moment. I have disappeared. Underneath, I am staying here. Away from the other place, the surface world. I've been there too long. It's time for me to stay under here. Forever. Where I belong. Where I can really live. Jesus, grant me the courage to do so.
I wake in Coyne's B&B and I rub my eyes and look across and think that I must be still dreaming as Mal is nowhere to be seen. His side of the bed is empty. I am absolutely amazed. It's 7:30 in the morning and Mal has not slept in his bed. No missed calls from him. I hope he's okay. I start to worry then. Did his heart give way again? Is Mal lying somewhere? And then I think it'd save me having to tell him that I was leaving him if he was dead, like. What a bitch I am. Ah. Anyway, someone would have rang me if he'd collapsed. No. He must have stayed at the hotel. Very unlike him, though. My phone bleeps. That'll be him. But it's not Mal. It's from Breffni. Hope to see you later. I love you. What am I doing? I'm moving. At last, I'm moving to somewhere else. Stalled for so long. I'd given over my body to Breffni. It'll take time for the other, for us to really get in tune or whatever with our inner selves and monsters and egos and the whole works. But I think we can. I think. He's open. He's coming towards me. Mal was always retreating. The breath will pull up into the square at 9 and wait for me. Jesus, that's in an hour. Where the fuck is Mal? I need to find him. I give him a call, but just get his business like, please leave a message for Malachy. I was always on to him to change that thing. Sure, most people ringing wouldn't even know who Malachy is. He's Mal. Mal. I have to find him.
I get up out of the bed, I dress. I'll have to go looking for him. I stuff the few clothes into me bag and rush down the stairs and out the front door of the B&B. I hurry along, hungover and dehydrated from last night, but adrenaline is shooting through me system and the madness of what I am about to do. I come out in the Dublin Road side of the town, past the three-headed monster, Aldi, Lidl and Tesco's, and up towards the square, my mind racing. I'll be back here at 9 to meet Breffni. My heart pumps and I smile and my phone rings. I whip it up, but it's not Mal and it's not Breffni. It's my daughter, Siobhan. Jesus, no, of all the... I would usually ignore her, but decide to pick up just in case she has heard from Mal. Hi, hi, ma'am. Yes, this is she. Yeah, hi. Sorry for ringing so early. Did you have a good night? Yes, I say, and I tell her that her father is a right rock and roller and that he stayed out all night. And she pauses and laughs and says, yeah, right. She asks about Laura and Bino and apologises again for not being able to make it. Her voice is small or something, like there's no edge, no air of confrontation or picking a fight or, ma'am, I don't understand you. I say that I'm dying of a hangover and she laughs. And no hint of recrimination about the drinking, because that had often caused problems between us in the past. Me coming in a little bit pissed and getting thick with her, and her attitude to me and her slavish devotion to her da and her little mis-even-tempered passive-aggressive act versus my bull in a china shop. I feel I should be the next to speak, so I ask after Wayne. She says that he's okay, but that she finds the apartment a bit small and... She hesitates and adds that he's a bit of a creature of habit. I can't help myself. That doesn't surprise me. Men like that always are, old before their time. She interrupts me. Please, ma'am, I don't need bike plough on. I want the fight. I mean, Jesus, do you still have sex? Shut up, ma'am. Does he still want to? Shut the fuck up, ma'am. Oh, I mean, why you had to move in with him, I'll never fucking know. She explodes to get away from you. I am about to launch a missile right back at her. But I hear her crying. Real sobbing. And she has not cried in my presence since she was 9 or 10, no matter how many times I fought with her. So I stop myself. I bite the lip. I walk on past the tattoo parlour and bookies and vape shops. And I say, Siobhan, come on. What's up with you? She clears her throat. She hesitates and then speaks. I'm pregnant. I took a test when I got home this morning. He doesn't know. I don't want to tell him. I can't tell anyone. I don't even know why I rang you, because the way we do be, but sometimes you just need your mam. I keep on walking. And I say to her, do you want to keep it, Siobhan? She says nothing and I can hear the tears again. She says that she just doesn't know. She doesn't love Wayne anymore. She knows that much. I try and stop myself feeling pleased over this. I can hear the 10-year-old girl on the phone and I am the mam. She just needs her mam. But all the bad feeling and resentment caused by our ongoing battle of wills is like a chain around me neck, strangling me, squashing words in me throat. But then she tells me that she's sorry. For us always fighting. And she knows how rough it was for me growing up. That I had a lot of shite to deal with. And she's sorry for not always allowing me that. I choke now. She was always more adult than I was. She was always a strong and true little soul. I was a coward. She goes on like it's gushing out of her. She thinks she might like to have the child, but is shit scared that it would, the thing inside her might grow up and cause pain. The pain that she's only ever seemed to have caused me. I feel like I've been kicked in the stomach. All the emotion that I'm holding just bursts out. I just break down. I lose it. I keep saying, sorry. I'm sorry. I can't find any other sounds to make. I want to give her comfort. I want to take back the poison that I've inflicted on her over the years. I want to. But all I can do is cry. Siobhan's little voice appears in my ear. What am I going to do, ma'am? All I can say to her is that everything will be okay. Everything else matters for fuck all when a little girl needs your help. I say for her to come over to the house tonight and that the three of us will sit down and talk about it, me, her and Mal, that we'll work it out. Siobhan says that she will. She asks me to tell her da. Of course, I say. She says, thanks, ma'am. I say to try and get her head down for a few hours. We'll be home by the afternoon, back in Limerick, the city of love. She hangs up. I walk on towards the hotel. I must find Mal. I am needed. I have to stay. She's never needed me like this before, not since she learned how to crawl, so I won't be going anywhere. Breffni flashes into my head. His naked body lying back in the bed. How great to be with that, to feel that again. But the Breff is the Breff, with his new life and his imagined nirvana in Kerry. I wish him well, but deep down I know he'll settle for drinking. I wonder how long he'll wait in the square before he gives up on me. He'll never stop to settle, but I have. Me, Mal and Siobhan, my family. But where is Mal? I still can't find Mal. He'll turn up. Maybe this is where the 50 plus years have been leading to. Minding your own flesh and blood in her hour of need and helping her make a decision. Or maybe taking care of a grandchild. A gift. I can't wait to tell Mal, my pal. But where the fuck is he? I go inside the hotel lobby and go up to the receptionist. I'm suddenly stumped as to what I want to ask her, so I smile and I say, I wonder, could you help me? But I think I've lost my husband.
You've been listening to Heaven by Eugene O'Brien, directed by Jim Culleton. Janet Moran played Mairead. Andrew Bennett played Mal. The composer was Carl Kennedy. Sound supervision was by Tommy O'Sullivan. The producer for RTE was Kevin Brew. The series producer of Drama on One is Kevin Reynolds. Heaven by Eugene O'Brien was first commissioned and produced on stage by Fishamble, the New Play Company. And if you or anyone you know has been affected by the issues raised in the piece, you can find helpline information at rte.ie/support. You'll find Heaven and hundreds of plays in the RTE archive at rte.ie/drama-on-one.
rte.ie/drama-on-one.